One, two, three.
All right. Very synced.
That sounded as far off, I think, as I've ever heard it.
Well, we can do it again if you want.
I'm standing here in pieces, and you're having to lose the Strandia.
It's a dark time for the Podosphere. Marshal Latham, striking from a hidden base, has won his first victory since forming the Journey Into podcast. During the battle, he managed to steal Rish Outfield away from the Doomsteef podcast, forming an alliance between them based on their love for Star Wars. Pursued by the Empire's sinister agents, Marshal and Rish believe they have something interesting to say about the decades-old franchise, its characters, the players behind the scenes, and the new adventures to come. Clearly, they must be suffering from delusions of grandeur.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Star Wars Delusions of Grandeur here on the Journey Into podcast.
I'm out of it for a little while. Everybody gets delusions of grandeur.
We have a great episode for you today, but before we get into that, I'd like to introduce my companion and co-host here, Rish Outfield from the Doomsteef Audio Fiction Magazine and the Rish Outcast. Hey, Rish.
Una guta, Marshall?
Listen, Guido.
Hello.
It's Guido.
You called him Guido.
What kind of Star Wars?
Oh, did I? Oh, jeez.
Thank you.
Guido would be what his name was.
Risky business.
Yes. Guido was the name of the guy in The Godfather, not...
Guido the Killer Pimp.
That's right.
Hey, who is this female voice I'm hearing? What?
Yeah.
My conscience finally came back?
Who is that?
Yes, this is your conscience. We haven't spoken in a while.
I'm just so not into podcast etiquette. I just jump in before I'm introduced.
Well, introduce yourself, Renee. Sorry, spoilers.
It's Renee.
Yes, it's Renee Chambliss. Glad to have you here with us.
Thank you. I love to talk about Star Wars. It's fun to offer my possibly unique take on it all. So thank you for having me.
Oh, definitely.
And here to make trouble is my Doomsteef cohort, B. Forgotten his name. Big Anklevich.
And yeah, it's kind of a January miracle here, getting everybody all together.
Well, it's for the big January 15th holiday. I don't know if you celebrate that in your religion, but us here at the Doomsteef, we're really into it. So we decided to go all out this year. And
it was a huge date in my area because it was the last due date for college applications.
Oh, college, yeah.
My daughter is applying to colleges, and January 15th was the last one, so she's finally done with all of that.
Oh, yeah, and you're facing that now, aren't you?
Big day.
Did you cry?
I will be crying, but she's still here, so I'm okay now.
Crying for a different reason.
That's right. Talk to me in the fall, and it'll be a totally different story.
Probably ought not to talk to you in the fall because you'll just be a mess. We'll wait until spring.
Yeah, I'll need some big time support.
Channel that into your art, Renee.
I do. Thank you.
Renee is an audiobook narrator with the dulcet tones of 100 angels. And anytime we can get somebody without a Y chromosome onto our show, I feel like it's January 15th all over again. So thank you for meeting with us, Renee.
Oh, you're so welcome. And thanks for putting up with my Skype issues and...
Oh, no problem.
Not able. And I saw the movie so late compared to the rest of you. So you all are awesome for your patience with me.
Would Rogue One be the movie you're referring to?
That is.
Have you ever heard somebody refer to it as Rogue One, A Star Wars Story?
I have not.
Okay, good. Let's keep that up.
Have you ever heard anyone refer to it as episode 3.5?
No, you have?
No. Oh. Yeah.
Episode 3.95.
I wonder if they'll come up with any crap like that. eventually, because they really like their episode numbers and stuff. Ever since episode one came along, and they just called it episode one for a very long time. After that, it was like everybody fell in love with this whole episode number something and started referring to all of them that way.
I hope they don't.
Yeah, well, I don't want to jump the gun, but there were some key differences between how this one was presented as opposed to the other one. So I felt it really was separate.
Yeah, they did do all that they could to separate it. But Marshall, if you don't mind letting me drive for a minute.
No, go ahead, Rich.
Renee, why didn't you see it?
Right away?
When everybody else saw it.
No good or interesting reason. Just busy. Just
filling out college applications.
We were filling out college applications. Well, not we. I was, you know, sort of supporting the college application process. No, just like a ton of stuff going on. I was really, really, really tempted to sneak away by myself and go just watch it. But I, you know, my family loves Star Wars too. So they were like, no, we all want to see it. And it just took a while before we could all go see it together.
Well, that's cool. You went to Disneyland.
We did.
Which I don't think any of us have done in a while. And you saw some Star Wars stuff there, right?
We went to Disneyland. It was maybe 2 days after Carrie Fisher died. It was really a great thing to do, but it was also strange because, well, you know, I love Disneyland, but the cynical side of me knew that had they known what was going to happen with Carrie Fisher, they would have prepared for that with the merchandise, because there is so much merchandise now. I mean, it is nuts if you go there. There is, you know, phone cases and, you know, I mean, tons of things. There's little dresses for little toddler girls and all kinds of stuff. But they really didn't have much Princess Leia merchandise. And I totally would have bought something if they had had it, but they didn't, because, of course, it was a big shock. We didn't.
It was all Rey and what's-her-face?
Yeah, yeah, it was all the newer things. And, you know, some of the classic stuff. But, you know, Princess Leia, as iconic and wonderful as she was, she didn't sort of hold a singular place with that kind of, maybe back in the 70s, there were Princess Leia t-shirts and things, but lately there really haven't been. I'm sure there are now. Like, I think if we went to Disneyland right now, we would see a lot of it. But when I was there, you know, shortly after she passed away.
Would they have managed to pump those things out that fast? I would think that it's going to be like 4 or 5 months before we see a huge influx of, hey, nostalgia for Princess Leia.
Yeah, I don't know. We need someone to go to Disneyland and check it out and see.
Ooh, I'll jump on that grenade.
Now would be the great time to go. You really don't want to go right after Christmas. It is crazily mobbed.
Oh, really? See, I would think like January and February would be good times because...
No, I think they are, but the holidays, you know, when people are off...
The Christmas break time is the bad time because everybody's out of school.
Yeah. I mean, we got there. We were there from opening to closing, and early morning and in the late evening, it was okay. But the middle of the day, I mean, you could barely walk across the park. It was lots of people.
Okay.
But fun. We still enjoyed it. And it was great to, you know, see all the Star Wars things as well as everything else.
Well, last time I went to Disneyland, there was hardly any Star Wars anything. And I don't imagine I'd even recognize it now. Did you go on Hyperspace Mountain?
Yeah, Tomorrowland is going to become Star Wars land, basically, with the exception of the Buzz Lightyear ride, which is very fun. No, it's great for Star Wars fans. It's awesome. I mean, Space Mountain is now Hyperspace Mountain, which has a Star Wars theme. Like, you see Star Destroyers and the Death Star, you know, as you're riding on Space Mountain. They have where Mission to Mars used to be. It's a whole... sort of almost like a little museum for Star Wars. And you go in there and you can wait for 45 minutes and talk to a Wookiee. And you can spend, you know, thousands of dollars on a full-on Darth Vader costume. And it's a nice place to just chill when you're tired of the crowds. You can go in there. But so they have that. Of course, Star Tours, which is just phenomenal. I mean, I've gone every year around that time for the past several years, and each time it's different, you know. It's and they incorporate things from the newer movies, so it's a lot of fun.
So Renee, did you go on Star Tours multiple times, or do you just go once per visit? Because I've heard it's different each time.
Just once, because being sort of borderline elderly, the whole simulation of it is kind of tough on my equilibrium. So,
yeah, I had that problem too the last time I went to an amusement park. I was ready to puke all of a sudden for little rides that weren't ever even a thing before. I was suddenly wanting to puke on everything.
Yeah, that's kind of depressing. But I think something about the way that Star Tours is done with it, you know, it moves, but it's also not doing exactly what your brain thinks it's doing. It's hard on those of us who are older and don't have the same kinds of nervous systems that the younger people do. So we only went out the one time. Well, and then also going when we went, I mean, the line was crazy long. And, you know, I go with these very competent teenagers who can help me get fast passes. And we're really good at, you know, maximizing our time and minimizing our wait times. But, you know, after we got that first fast pass, to go on it again, it would have been quite a long wait. So we did other things.
Now, did you find, you know, you've been in California for a long time, and I'm sure you've been to Disneyland a bunch of times.
I have, yes.
Do you miss the old Tomorrowland at all if it's become Star Wars Land? You know, I know that at a time they started to joke around and say, oh yeah, Tomorrowland is basically Yesterday Land now. Because it was like retro, you know, I mean, I guess it wasn't retro. You could say it was retro style, but it was just old style future stuff. It was like future of the 60s. That's all gone. But, you know, I mean, they just did that Tomorrowland movie and basically romanticized the whole retro future kind of thing.
Yeah, I never saw that movie.
No one saw that movie.
I mean, I do miss, like, I remember Mission to Mars and The People Mover and The Inner Space. Did you guys ever do that
one? I remember the Hall of Presidents.
The People Mover would go into inner space. So, you know, I remember that, but being such a Star Wars fan, I'm like all for more Star Wars things. And like I said, you know, you've got the little rockets that still is there. We didn't do that. But Buzz Lightyear is very fun. And here's a little possibly insider tip. They have fast passes for the Buzz Lightyear ride, which you can get no matter what other fast passes you have. And I guess maybe I should explain what a fast pass is. What you do is you go, you put your ticket into this little slot and it gives you a pass for the popular rides that says, okay, you can go on this ride, come back at, you know, 10 o'clock, and you can basically go to the front of the line and you don't have to wait very long for the ride. But you only get them, you can't get, you know, 20 fast passes at a time. You can only get one at a time, basically, except for Buzz Lightyear. You can get as many Buzz Lightyear fast passes as you want. So, yeah.
Nice. It's a good bit of insider trading info there. Thank you.
It is. It's an insider information. So you're looking out for everyone.
Yeah, I don't know. I just wonder, because I know that you're a big Star Wars fan, but I don't know how much of a, like, sci-fi fan you are. Like, I don't know, just... I grew up as a sci-fi fan in general, and I loved, you know, stuff even like Buck Rogers or Battlestar Galactica and some of the more, you know, cheesier stuff. And, you know,
I'm a sporadic sci-fi fan. So when I was little, I loved Lost in Space. That was one of my favorite shows.
Uh-huh.
I'm a huge Star Trek Next Generation fan. So I believe that Captain Picard is the best captain, which I know is very controversial. So I'm, you know, admitting that now. And then Star Wars, you know, I love, like, some of the Alien movies. I mean, there are different sci-fi. I've read sci-fi. I enjoy that kind of imaginative storytelling. You know, Firefly, that's something that Rish actually told me about several years ago, which I love. So I guess yes and no. There are some things that I really love, but I wouldn't say kind of across the board, like anything sci-fi I know a lot about, because that wouldn't be true.
Cool. I'm sort of hijacking, I guess, the show, and I should shut up. But I don't know. I feel like a slight bit of sadness, too, for the fact that all the Lost in Space era kind of stuff, you know, all the little rocket ships and the cheesy kind of old stuff is gone.
But I would think
I also love Star Wars.
That seems quaint to a lot of people. And not quaint in a charming way, but in a let's roll our eyes sort of thing. And I lived in L.A. when the E.T. ride had its, like, final run at Universal Studios. And there were so many people I knew that was like, oh, we got to go on the E.T. ride right now before it ends. And I'd be like, but that's a really lame ride, guys. And they're like, yeah, but you'll never be able to go on it again. And when they said that, I thought, oh, yeah, you're right. To hear E.T. say your name at the end of the ride, I'll never be able to hear that again. And suddenly it meant something to me.
Did you have him actually say your name? Or did you put in a fake name like many people do? I had him call me Lamar.
Why?
I don't know. It's just the dumb name. I shouldn't say that in case anybody named Lamar is listening. It was an unusual name that I thought I would throw in.
Same thing when they shut down the Jaws ride. I was just like, oh, no. They shut that down? Oh, no. I never really thought it was that great to begin with, but once it was gone.
Well, right now there's something like that going on at Disneyland because the Tower of Terror is transitioning to some sort of Guardians of the Galaxy ride.
Oh, it's not transitioning to a David S. Pumpkins thing?
Yeah.
David S. Pumpkins. All right.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I would love it if it did that. But we didn't go into California Adventure, but my teenagers that I was with, they discussed that. And they're like, oh, come on, what's the big deal? It's basically the same ride. It's just going to have a different theme. So, but no, there are people who are going like, we've got to go on a Tower of Terror before it ends.
There is something about that, about the... Mm-hmm. The something that you used to love but you can't do anymore that makes it all the sweeter. And... Yeah, like when the Back to the Future ride ended, the same thing. It's like, oh, we're going on the last day. We're going to all wear T-shirts. I was like, but, dude, he says jumping gigawatts on the Back to the Future ride. Come on. But now, you know, I wish I'd gone with him.
Yeah.
Because you can't go on it now.
You can't hear jumping gigawatts anymore.
No, it's against the law. I'm sorry. I turned that conversation to talk about Disneyland there. I just... I have no idea if I'd even recognize Disneyland now.
Because, oh, you would. You totally would. It's the same. There's just like a billion more people. But.
So, Renee, just curious, when you were at the gift shops there at Disneyland, did you happen to see a remote control mouse droid? Apparently, they're only available in the Disneyland stores, not even online at Disney Store.
No, I guess I did not. I mean, there were BB-8 little...
No, these are the MSE droids.
Yeah, I guess I didn't.
And this mouse droid is Mickey Mouse?
No, this is the little toaster droid that looks
is
like a toaster.
The Death Star droid? The Chewy growls at?
Yeah, on the Death Star.
The little remote control cars?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Because I didn't see it didn't mean that it wasn't there, because those gift shops now are amazingly abundant with merchandise. So
there's a dewback that they sell at Disneyland that's in scale with 6-inch figures that I always was like, ooh, I gotta go to Disneyland just for that. Or I could buy it on eBay, but no, I gotta go to Disneyland. Yeah,
that would be a very large figure. I've seen dewbacks and like speeder bikes and a few other things in scale for 12-inch figures, and those are insanely large and awful.
They're not awful, they're awesome.
Well, where would you put it though? What would you do? It would eat.
I've says an, big when he's got an AT-AT.
I know,
right
I've
there.
Got an AT-AT there, and this a 12-inch scale dewback would eat the AT-AT.
Well, see, now you're going to have to get an AT-ACT like they had on Rogue One.
That's the orange door one?
Yes, the AT-ACTs.
Oh, stop it, Marshall. Come on. Yeah, you're bumming me out.
Hey, I'm just trying to get it back to Rogue One here.
The topic of the podcast.
Yes. So you didn't see Rogue One until later than most people.
Right.
Because you were
and
busy
in fact,
doing holiday stuff.
Yeah. And when I was at Disneyland, I was kind of worried that there might be some sort of spoiler. We even talked about that when we went on Star Tours. Like, what if there's some spoiler from Rogue One that is on the ride? But there wasn't. We were good.
Big sign flashes up that says, spoiler alert, close your eyes if you haven't seen the film.
But does Paul Reubens still do the voice on the Star Tours? Is that all gone?
Gosh, I don't know.
You know what I'm talking about? Pee Wee Herman did the voice of the pilot. They'd be like, it's my first day too.
Now there are maybe 20 different options. So that's why you can go on Star Tours multiple times in one day and have different experiences. So it's just different. Like, the droid who is your pilot will change depending on which version you're doing.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, it's really cool. It is extremely cool. It's very, very fun. And, you know, the whole, like, nausea issue is kind of a bummer for those of us who really want to experience it, because it is, it's amazing, you know, and you're like in a weird way experiencing Star Wars. So yeah, so it's totally worth doing, but it's different every time. Well, not every time. Like I said, there's maybe 20 different versions, so you can have repeats, but this one that we did this year was different than anyone we'd done before.
Cool. So then you saw the movie much later?
Yeah, I saw it, gosh, I guess about a week and a half ago, maybe? Yeah, a little over a week ago.
And you hadn't had anything spoiled for you?
Thankfully, no, I had not.
Renee, it's like the pilot of that Star Tours ride says, oh, by the way, Jyn Erso dies. Have fun!
No. I mean, I knew that it took place before episode 4. So we actually watched episode 4 the night before we went to go see it. So that was really cool to do, because we got to see the tie-ins very clearly.
So Renee, give us your basic overall impression of the movie.
Of Rogue One?
Yeah, Rogue One.
I loved it. I thought it was fabulous. You know, dark has never bothered me. And I just thought I really liked how it sort of tied it together. And some of these plot holes that we thought about for years were collapsed or sewn up or, you know, resolved. I guess my one sort of regret about it is I wish that we could get to know these characters better, because I really liked what I saw of them, and I don't see how they would be able to flesh out those characters without doing a kind of cheesy prequel thing, which we all know, you know, is very tough to do effectively.
Well, wouldn't just an extended cut of the movie with all that stuff from the trailers put back in help with that?
Well, sure. No, it would.
Let me ask you this. How does it feel being a young, hot British girl that you have starred in two Star Wars movies back to back?
I don't get it. I don't understand that question.
Okay, Marshall, you take the next question.
I mean, okay, so we're going back. So when we talked about The Force Awakens, you guys, not Big, because he wasn't a part of that podcast, so you are absolved from this, what I'm about to say. But
wasn't even invited.
You guys said to me, like, isn't it great? You know, as a woman, don't you appreciate the fact that, like, now we have a woman, like, main character? And I said, well, yeah, you know, that's great. But I mean, the shame is that that is a notable thing. Like, why is that a big deal? Like, wouldn't it have been better if that wasn't even anything that we noticed? And that actually is one of my complaints about Rogue One, which, as I said, I loved, but it was back to the sort of typical, all these characters and the girl, you know? Yes, she was the main character, but she was pretty much it, as is typical in these sorts of, you know, awesome adventure stories. And I just get tired of that. You know, I wish that, why do all these characters have to be guys except for the one? But
you don't like the Smurfette effect?
Exactly. It's not that I don't like it. It's just,
you wish it was more like the Scooby Gang.
I just wish it wasn't even a big deal. Like, I wish it wasn't even a topic of discussion, that characters could be male or female without it being anything that we even pay any attention to.
I think those days are gone. That's what everybody wants to talk about.
Well, that's the other thing. I'm glad we've had a little bit of distance from when I saw this movie to when we're talking about it, because after I saw it, I was like, oh my gosh, there's so much that could be tied into what's going on right now in the real world. But, you know, no one wants to talk about that right now. So
no, by all means, let's not talk about the real world. We'll have to put an explicit warning on this thing.
No real world discussions are happening here.
Okay, well, let me ask all three of you, who is your favorite character in Rogue One? And we will let, in fact, I haven't heard from Marshall. Are you there, sir? Are you there, sir?
I am here.
Oh, thank goodness they haven't found them. Marshall, who's your favorite character in Rogue One?
It's kind of a toss-up between K2SO and Chirrut Imwe, I think.
I can hear Big saying, who?
The robot and the blind guy.
Yeah, that's what I would have to do is describe them that way. I know they all have names, but they're not familiar names, and they're Star Wars names, so they're, you know, Elo Asti and etc. Until Rish said the name of the lead female character, I couldn't remember it.
Okay, well, you're talking big. Who is your favorite character in Rogue One?
Renee
wasn't in Rogue One. I know you.
No, I wasn't no, in no, it.
I'm just passing the question on to you so I can think. Go.
I don't know that I really have a favorite character. I mean, I liked the ensemble. I liked that it was an ensemble. I thought that was really cool. I liked the... Okay, so this is where my, like, non-Star Wars geekishness comes across. Because what was the name of the guy who was the blind guy's friend?
Is it Baze Malbus?
Baze Malbus. Yep, that's correct.
Yes. Like, he was awesome. Like, I wanted to know more about them. I wanted to know more about their relationship. And because he obviously was annoyed with the blind guy's devotion to the Force. But he still backed him up and... obviously was completely in his corner, so I thought that was great.
Yeah, somebody suggested on a podcast I was listening to that they should do a Netflix series of those two guys. I thought that would be really cool.
That would be good. But like with the parents, you know, with Galen, right? Galen, the dad?
Yes.
Yeah. And the mom, I mean, that was fascinating. There was so much that we could know more about. I mean, that was fascinating. The life that they had sort of carved out for themselves to try to escape from it. But knowing that it was unlikely that they would be able to stay removed from it all. Like, and they had a whole plan for what to do when the inevitable came. Like all of that, like, I thought was really, really interesting. So, yeah, I can't pick one. I liked the characters. I wanted to know more about them, which is the best you can hope for as a storyteller, you know, that you've got intriguing characters.
Yeah, too bad there's not going to be a sequel.
I just don't see how they could do a sequel.
They did a sequel in 1977.
Oh,
yeah.
But Marshall told me that a couple of those characters are already slated to appear on Star Wars Rebels, which takes place before Rogue One, so maybe we'll see Chirrut Imwe and Baze Malbus and those guys again.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe some of them will wind up in the young Han Solo movie.
I hope not.
Yeah, I kind of hope not, too.
Okay.
But I think it would be cool if Walrus Man and his friends show up in the Han Solo ones. They could be like the Stan Lee cameo for the Star Wars anthology show.
Big really hated that, and the more he hated it, the more I was like, yeah, they probably were supposed to. How did they survive? And
yeah, they must have really quickly got off the planet because they blew the damn thing up like the very next minute, and you're like, but those people were supposed to be on Tatooine later. So,
well, see, they have the death sentence on 12 systems, so maybe that's one of the systems.
Not anymore, because they blew it up. They're down to 11 systems now. They're gonna have to change the line. Lucas is gonna go back in and special edition it into 11. Okay, so I suppose I should answer that question. And the problem is I was kind of like Renee in that I couldn't answer the question because I don't know any of the characters well enough. I felt like it was one of those big ensemble type movies. But I never felt like we got to know any of it wasn't like, say, the Avengers movie where, again, we had a big ensemble cast. But it felt like they all had more to do and better to do than what we had in this film. And
well, were you bothered that you didn't get to know them better?
A little bit, yeah. I felt like, man, I really want to care about these characters more, especially since they're all dying now. And I wanted to, you know, have a tear flow out or something like that. And I just didn't. And I don't know if it... Because I'm normally one of those, you know, people that cries too much at a movie. You know, like when you're a dude, you're not supposed to cry at a movie. Or people make fun of you and stuff like that. And even my wife makes fun of me for it. She'll
look over.
Yeah. She'll look over and check. Like when it gets to an emotional part, she's like, oh, is he crying now? Oh, is he? Is he? Oh, I need to jab him in the ribs if he is.
Oh.
So, you know, normally that's the way I am, but, you know, I didn't do that with this film, so I don't know what the deal was with that. I'd have to say I did like K2SO because he was sassy and, you know, fun as far as that goes. If anybody could have brought me to tears with his noble death, it was him when he was taking on all the death troopers or whatever the heck he was taking on at the end there. I don't remember. Weren't all the all black guys called death troopers?
Not in the movie, but that's what the toys are called, so that's what we call them. Just like Marshall said, Walrus Man.
Yeah, so that was a good moment, and I might have felt a little emotional, at least for that bit. I also like Chirrut Imwe.
Hey, good job.
Chirrut Imwe was probably the most interesting other character there was because of his little, I'm one with the force is with me, I'm one with the force, and he would do these odd stuff, and he would... And he kicked a bunch of people's butts being blind, which is interesting because he shouldn't be able to do that.
But he was one with the Force.
But he was one with the Force, so apparently it was telling him where to be, what to hit. But you never, that's the problem with, like Renee was saying, you never got a good sense of what the heck the deal was with these guys. They were Jedi Temple guards or something, and like what? Why was he one with the Force? Why was he into the Force? Why did he have a little best friend that hung around with him? And I don't know. They made me think of like some kind of samurai movie characters, but I don't know which ones.
What did you guys think about the fact that, you know, in previous Star Wars movies, the line between good and evil has been very clearly defined? You know, characters were good or they were not good, you know, with the exception of Anakin, Darth Vader. But in this movie, we had the rebellion wasn't perfectly good and really at all. You know, we had lots of controversy. We had people doing things that were pretty bad in the name of good. Did you like that?
I certainly did. The part where Cassian Andor kills that guy at the very beginning and he didn't have to. It's just like, well, what if this guy says the wrong thing? What if the stormtroopers take him? What if we're all, it's like, no, he's gonna slow me down dead. That's kind of the impression I got. I mean, you can read anything into it, but there's that line where he says we've all done terrible things for the rebellion.
That's
a new twist.
Well, it's more realistic, I would think, too. I don't know if that's always what we're going for in Star Wars, because we're, you know, all about like hero's journey and the, you know, epic story and all the people fitting into certain categories and all that kind of stuff. But in the wake, I don't know if this has anything to do with it, but in the wake of like big movies like Captain America's Winter Soldier, where you had everything that should be good being bad and nobody can know and everything's turned upside down and people seem to really dig on it. I don't know if that was any kind of model for them, but in a real life rebellion, yeah, there's going to have to be a lot of bad stuff done in the name of good to try and make things happen. You know, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
Yeah, I really liked it. I thought it added so much to the story and made it so much richer and fuller and more, I guess, realistic, but believable, you know, because in the factions, when they're trying to decide, you know, when she's making her impassioned plea on what we need to do, and they're like, I don't know, you know, and, you know, some people are like, well, this isn't going to really work for me. I mean, that is kind of how things are, sadly. And so after that, being able to sort of pull it together and act despite all of that conflict and people not really knowing what they should be doing and people maybe doing things that aren't 100% good in the name of the cause, you know, I thought that was really powerful.
Well, yeah, and if you think about it, you know, in the original trilogy, there was the rebellion, and there were people, you know, obviously General Dodonna and Mon Mothma and people like that that we kind of saw and knew what their names were. But really, the rebellion itself was kind of set dressing, and they were kind of the exposition part of the scenario where mostly we were focusing on, you know, Luke and Leia and Han and Chewie and what they were doing, appropriately so. But we really didn't see, we just kind of saw, you know, they came in and said, okay, this is what's going on with the rebellion. But here in Rogue One, we have the opportunity at least to see partially what what the actual rebellion was like and all these different people and how hard mm-hmm. it was for them to get together. And
what that meant, you know, what it...
Yeah. Yeah. And then they had Saw Gerrera, who was definitely against the Empire, but didn't necessarily get along with the rebellion either. So that was...
Yeah, I loved that. That was... I thought that was great. Because you do have that, you know, in real life. You have the people, which I know we're not supposed to talk about. But, you know, you have the people who are more extreme and then the people who aren't as extreme. And, you know, trying to sort of reconcile those two views and have them be able to work together. You know, it's not easy. It's complicated.
So, Risha... You did get a chance to answer your own question there. Who are your favorite characters from the movie?
Oh, I kind of hoped I could skate by without you guys asking me. Because I was going to say Darth Vader. And I knew you guys would say, no, that you can't say Darth Vader.
Cheater.
Yeah, cheater.
Okay, but you have to pair him up with Boar Gullet.
Wait, well, who's Boar Gullet?
Boar Gullet is the pink squid slug thing that reads the pilot's mind or whatever.
Yeah, that should have ended up on the cutting room floor, actually, that Boar Gullet scene. We needed like two or three more conversations between human characters, and that didn't give us anything. I actually also quite liked Director Krennic, the main villain of it. Yeah, okay, he's evil and all that stuff, but I sort of related to him and the power struggle between him and Tarkin and that scene where he goes to Vader and he's trying to maintain his composure and be all tough against this guy who's the embodiment of every child's fear. Vader is the boogeyman or whatever, and yet he's standing before him, and I don't know, I enjoyed that aspect of the movie, because we got a little bit with that character, and as opposed to maybe General Hux in Force Awakens, where I have no idea what's going on with that guy or what his motivations is, except for he gets really, really passionate when he's out in the snow wanting to destroy the resistance.
I heard that Krennic might be up for best director in the Oscars this year too. Because he was really good.
I also like Chiwetel Ejiofor. And just, yeah, that my favorite scene in the film is the scene where he's walking to turn on the projector, or whatever you call it, and the stormtroopers just miss him. You know, they can't hit him with the blaster thing. And you can say, well, stormtroopers have never been able to hit anything. But it's just that, yeah, I feel like he channeled the force in there. And yeah, just...
Yeah.
I that's a really powerful scene to me. It's the... All these stormtroopers just kind of like, do you remember in Star Wars when Obi-Wan and Vader start fighting on the Death Star, and all these stormtroopers are like, hey, guys, look, Lord Vader has his laser sword out. Come on. And they all just like gather around, like eating popcorn and taking bets on the old man and stuff. I just like, that's really, really cool. And yeah, there's that moment when Chiwetel Ejiofor is like, hey, the blind guy's going, all right, 10 credits to whoever hits the blind guy, go. And none of them can do it.
That's probably why the stormtroopers were never able to hit anybody. They were all one with the Force. And the Force was with them.
Okay, so that's a plot hole that really needs to be filled. And I'm hoping it's going to be in subsequent...
In Rogue
possibly
Two.
Standalone Star Wars movies. Why the stormtroopers are such bad shots.
Because they're just... They're like the guy... They're the Cobra soldiers. They're just...
Because you can see nothing in those helmets,
yeah,
guys.
Terrible.
Luke even says it. I can't see a thing in this helmet.
And what's the purpose of the outfit?
Well, I saw a cartoon on the internet where it was this scene of C-3PO and R2 going across in the at the beginning of Star Wars. And it has C-3PO sitting there saying, I am one with the Force. The Force is with me.
Nice. Yeah, that's how it works.
So I know how Big and Rish feel about this one, because they talked about it on their podcast.
We already posted our episode.
Yeah. But what did you think of Tarkin, Renee?
About having him come back as a character, even though the actor was passed away a long time ago.
Yeah. And how much he had a part in it.
It didn't bother me horribly. I mean, he didn't look like a real person, I didn't think. You know, I...
Jar Jar Tarkin?
You kind of wonder, like, had... I mean, I didn't... I guess maybe when I saw it, I might not have known that the actor had passed away, but I definitely knew that the actor didn't look like that currently in 2016, you know, because he was meant to look like how he looked in 1977. So I knew that it was CGI. So maybe that influenced me. And if I hadn't known that, I might not have realized that he was CGI, but it did just didn't look totally natural. But it didn't bother me because I guess he was a, you know, integral part to the story. And, you know, I thought they did a good job despite the fact that it wasn't completely believable.
Now, what if they just got a guy that was old and kind of Tarkin looking and cast him as Tarkin? Would that have improved the story, the show, you think? Or was it better to have a guy that looked exactly like Tarkin but moved in a very strange and odd and unrealistic way?
I don't know. Because he appeared, right? He was in one of the other movies. We saw him.
Yeah, at the end of Revenge of the Sith, there's a man who's made up to look like Tarkin. But he's a younger man. I mean, it's supposed to be, what, 3.5 years before Star Wars?
Because he would have been much younger. The, I guess what some might say creepy part of this is the fact that he is not supposed to be younger. He's supposed to be the same guy who we see in Episode 4.
Right, but, I mean... That's been done before. Like, for example, in the Harry Potter movies, you had Dumbledore.
Yes.
And then you had Dumbledore. And then Dumbledore died. And so they had a different Dumbledore. And it's just...
A different actor.
Another guy with long hair and a white
Bewitched.
Beard.
Bewitched.
And...
We have different Darrens.
Yeah, there you go. And they were both named Dick. Dick York and Dick Sargent, which is very weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, they just put in another guy that looks like him. I mean, for example...
I guess, you know what? Okay, here's what I think. The fact that it's Star Wars and we have seen this sort of thing, like this sort of manipulation has come up in other movies. We have
Benjamin Button,
Hayden Christensen showing up at the end of Return of the Jedi where he hadn't before. You know, I mean, it's we have Yoda who was originally a puppet who is now not, you know, and is looks kind of different because of that. I guess maybe that's why it didn't bother me tremendously. I mean, it was odd. It was definitely odd because he doesn't move and talk and act like a real person. It sort of looked like a video game to me. But it didn't. I didn't find it to be sort of disturbing or off-putting, I guess, because of the fact that that kind of thing happens in Star Wars and has happened.
Yeah, see, that was my whole problem. The Uncanny Valley was just... It was hitting me over the head. The first scene that he was on there, and, you know, at first you just see him from the back of the head, and you think, oh, we're just going to get a little bit, and then he's going to be done, and we're never going to see him again. And I would have been happy with that, but instead he turns around, and he, like, I got a close-up right on his face as he talks, and I was just like, the whole time, and then it was over, and I was like, I don't know what he said at all. I didn't even hear a word he said because I was just staring at his weirdness, and it took me so out of the movie that I disliked it. Now there's a young Han Solo movie coming up.
Start shooting in February.
They cast a dude as young Han Solo. How would it be if they instead just CG'd over this guy's face the whole time so that it looked, he looks like young Harrison Ford, and this guy that was cast at him is just, you know, the stand-in. Like, there was a guy that was actually credited as General Tarkin, and it wasn't Peter Cushing. It was whatever the guy's name was.
Yeah,
you're not going to freak out at that, I would assume. If they CG'd his face, you would. I would think, but it just, they cast somebody else. And maybe for a minute you'll be like, oh, he doesn't really look like Han Solo for the first minute. But after that, you'll be done and you'll be like, oh, that's Han Solo. And you'll be, you know, it's over.
But the difference is this is a young, well, like, okay, I'm sorry. This is where I like have to admit my not being a super Star Wars fan because I didn't know about
Don't
this.
Don't say it.
Does this take place How close in time does this take place to Star Wars 4?
Seems like minutes.
No. She's talking about the Han Solo movie. We don't know.
Han Solo movie.
Yeah, that we don't know.
But because the actor is like 23, 24 years old, we're assuming, okay.
So it would probably be quite a bit. Because, I mean, what is Han Solo is like in his 30s,
That's
right?
what I would say, yeah.
Harrison Ford? Yeah. So, I mean, we have, you know, to go back to sort of what has been done in Star Wars before, you know, we had Ewan McGregor play Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Exactly.
It was not an Alec Guinness sort of CGI to look like a younger version of himself. You know, that's an example of someone playing the same part who is quite a bit younger because at the time that the story is being told, the character is quite a bit younger. So I could see that being okay. And this, what's different about this is he is not quite a bit younger. I mean, he is like basically
exactly the same age,
weeks younger than what we see in Star Wars 4. So I don't know. It didn't bother me. I can understand why it would be bothersome because it was not, it didn't come across as a normal person.
Yeah, it wasn't natural is the problem.
But not having a huge emotional tie to that character, it didn't bother me.
Marshall, I'm thinking we should cut this whole scene and put it in our Tarkin episode.
We might have to. Let me go on record for Tarkin. Yeah. I was surprised at how much he was used. I expected him to be in a couple quick scenes. And I was surprised at how much they used him. And like Renee said, he didn't seem real when I was watching him. I guess, similar to Renee, it didn't bother me enough to ruin the movie for me or to ruin those scenes. And part of me was kind of, I guess, surprised or impressed that they had the cojones to do that. You know, that's pretty.
Sorry, Marshall, I don't speak Spanish. What does that mean?
But, you know, because Star Wars from the beginning was always, you know, on the cutting edge of technology. You know, George Lucas and his team were inventing things for the original movie. So this is kind of a representation of that. And granted, it didn't succeed 100%, but they did attempt to do it, and I applaud them for that, I guess.
Well, a couple of years ago, there was a movie by Rian Johnson, who's directing... Which Star Wars movie is Rian Johnson directing? He's doing Episode 8.
Episode 8.
Called Looper. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt plays a young Bruce Willis. But instead of just saying, hey, Joseph Gordon-Levitt is playing a young Bruce Willis, with CG, they elongated Joseph Gordon-Levitt's face to make him look a little bit more like Bruce Willis. But for the first half hour of that movie, I was just like, oh gosh, what happened to it? What is that? Is his face melting? What?
Joseph Gordon-Levitt in an accident? Is that why the Wampa hit him in the face?
There you go. I would rather they have just said, hey, this is the guy who's playing young Bruce Willis. Go with it. Because I was distracted by the CG, by the special effect or whatever. Whereas my mind could just say, oh, okay, new Dumbledore. Oh, this is young Bruce Willis. Same thing when the Han Solo movie comes out. I'll be like, oh, okay, this is new Han Solo. That's cool. And if a different actor had been playing Grand Moff Tarkin, I think maybe 10 seconds, 15 seconds, like, oh, okay, well, he kind of, all right. But then from that point on, it's like, oh, this is the new Tarkin. To me, it would have saved them millions of dollars and just would have saved me a little bit of headache of trying to remind myself I wasn't seeing some kind of astral projection of Moff Tarkin.
But what would we be talking about in this episode? We'd have to go back to Disneyland and talk just about that the rest of the time.
Well, maybe I shouldn't admit this, but I saw Looper and I didn't realize that Joseph Gordon-Levitt's face had been changed. Like, for me, it didn't register as being a CGI. I mean, it wasn't like Grand Moff Tarkin in Rogue One. I didn't notice that. So it could be the unfilm-educated masses might not have as much of a problem with it as those who are more savvy in the ways of film and CGI.
And that's certainly the case with young people. I've talked to a couple of people that are just like, what, he was a computer guy? And I was like, wow, you really didn't notice that. And they didn't. But
amazingly, yeah, there were people in the theater that didn't mind the way Princess Leia showed up at the end. But yeah, I shudder. She made Tarkin look so good, the Princess Leia at the end of Rogue One.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you on that one. That one seemed odd, really odd to me looking. It didn't look like her at all to me.
And I just wish they hadn't shown her face. I wish they'd just kept the hood on and had her voice and shown her hand, get the Death Star plans or whatever. And we know who it is, instead of wasting however much money they did transforming a Swedish actress into Carrie Fisher. Mm-hmm. Renee?
Yes?
Oh, wait. What were your thoughts on that last shot there with Princess Leia saying hope?
Well, I'm embarrassed to say it really didn't bother me. I loved the tie-in. I loved, especially maybe because I had just seen episode 4 like the night before, but I loved it. I thought it was so cool. And I wondered, you know, I knew that obviously wasn't 1977 Carrie Fisher, but I don't know. It didn't bother me. I thought it was neat.
Well, you don't need to feel bad. I am jealous of you. I wish that I had just gone with it. And because I know people were like super moved by that. But the only time I was moved in the movie was when Bail Organa, a character from the prequels, for goodness sake, talked about his daughter. And that's I cried then, because it's like I knew who he was talking about, and I love that character, and it made me love Bail Organa.
And it was Jimmy Smith, so I mean, come on, like
I dig Jimmy.
Who isn't going to be happy to see Jimmy Smith again? You know what? Maybe the difference was that when I saw it, Carrie Fisher had already died.
That could be a thing.
Yeah, I guess I would have to say that I was more bothered by her appearance in the second time I saw the movie more than the first. Because the first I was kind of caught up in everything. You know, we just had the Darth Vader scene and they're rushing out to get away. And her talking about hope, you know, led right into the next movie. So I was kind of all in that moment kind of thing. But then I guess I was paying more attention on the second viewing. And I thought, yeah, that just doesn't look right.
Well, and I've only seen it one time, but she had died. And I was like, oh, I mean, that sucks. So what about Darth Vader? Because I have seen some criticism about Darth Vader and how that all came about. And
tell us what the criticism is you're referring to.
Just that he didn't feel like the regular Darth Vader that we all know.
Well, I think Big and I also agreed with that the night that we saw it. We had never seen Vader in that way, but I bought it. It wasn't David Prowse in the suit, right? But it still looked like Darth Vader. It sort of sounded like Darth Vader.
Well, and the voice. I mean, the voices.
Yeah, the voice was unfortunate because, yeah, I mean, they still got James Earl Jones to do it, but James Earl Jones has never sounded so old to me, which made Darth Vader sound feeble and strange. And then, oddly, he kicked way more ass than he ever has before. He just went at it and ripped everybody to pieces. And you're like, oh, okay. That's a lot more than he did when he runs down the Rebel Corvette later on.
It didn't really bother me tremendously, but I did feel that there was sort of more emotion in his voice than, you know, the episodes 4, 5, 6, where he seems more monotone, more serious, more one-dimensional, but which works for Darth Vader. And one of the things, and you know, I know like in podcasts past, I have defended the prequels.
Oh, don't do that.
But you know, that
don't remind us.
Episode 3 of the that just seemed so not Vader-like. To have that kind of emotion come from the James Earl Jones voice. And so I felt that this Vader in Rogue One was more like that. I mean, he just seemed more emotional than what we see in Episode 4, which chronologically happens after.
We see Vader say, "Commander, tear this ship apart until you found those plans and bring me the passengers. I want them alive." And that's a bigger emotional outburst than we see in any of the other, the real trilogy.
That's true.
But the first scene we see Vader in felt so much more like Vader than the second scene we see Vader in. And my suspicion is that those are two different shoots with two different actors, two different directors. Yeah. But the first scene, that is the Vader that we know from Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
He's calm and he's smug and he's scary.
Yeah,
and
no, then... it was later on when he's kind of, he seemed more sort of flourishing and emotional and I don't know, just not quite as Vader.
Vader that we see in the original trilogy is not a hands-on guy. Although I guess he does hop in his little interceptor fighter and go in, and but he's in charge. He's the guy that tells, you know, he sends in the stormtroopers to kill everybody. And then he tells his commander to find the plans. And then anybody who crosses him, he's like, all right, well, see how you do being unable to breathe. You like that? Huh? You like that? Okay. I'm going to let up now, but you better start listening. Don't make me spank you again.
No.
You know, he's in charge. He doesn't have to go in, which they have him do in this one, by himself and cut up a bunch of... If he was the same guy, he would just be like, no, okay, go. We've got this ship. Now let's board it and take everybody like they do at the start of the next movie, which makes it seem weird. He's much more Anakin from the prequels. In that scene when he just comes running in and does amazing lightsaber work, and you know he flies on a disc over the top of the volcano and then kills all the rebel fighters, and so yeah, I don't know.
Now what if that was the only scene that we had with Vader? If we didn't have the Krennic scene, but we just had the come in and kill scene at the end?
Well, story wise, it wouldn't change anything. And I think you could probably remove that scene and just have Vader on the Star Destroyer that's pursuing the ship, and that's it. But, gosh, the audience just loved the scene with the lightsaber.
They did, yeah. And,
I mean, I get a visceral thrill because Vader is my character, man. Gosh, I love Darth Vader. And to see him just do stuff that we'd never seen him before and be the most fearsome guy in the galaxy was cool. But, yeah, it was a big... likened it to seeing Yoda go nuts in episode 2.
A little bit.
When he's spinning around.
Not quite as bad.
That just looked ludicrous, I thought. And Yoda is such a much more reserved, noble, Gandhi-like character that we didn't need to see that stuff. I could take it or leave it, the Vader thing. I like Vader, you know, being the guy that gives orders and all that stuff. But yeah, he was the Emperor's enforcer, right? He wouldn't be afraid to get his hands dirty. And I don't know. So I'm on the fence. I think I would have liked the movie just as much without that scene, but I don't have a problem with that scene.
Yeah, the audience did eat it up. I know a friend of mine at work told me that after the movie ended, and I think I may have said this in our podcast, but yeah, the kid turned to him. He looked around to make sure his mom didn't hear him, I guess, and then said, "Daddy, Darth Vader is the most badass villain ever." which
is pretty much true.
He is, but he wasn't, I mean, not because of what you saw on this movie. He wasn't that way. That's a completely new thing we'd never seen before. But you know, now he's the most badass because he can cut up a bunch of soldiers with his lightsaber, which was never a thing before. So I don't know, it's just strange.
Well, I wish we could have seen him do that in episode 3.
Right. Wait. Sorry, I was thinking 3 as in 6.
What is 6? 6 is Return
six
of the Jedi.
6 is Return of the Jedi. Episode 3, you mean Revenge of the Sith?
Yeah, we don't get to see Darth Vader hunt down and exterminate the Jedi.
Yeah, you just get execute order 666 younglings, or whatever it was.
Slaughtering younglings.
But, Renee, we don't even see that.
No, we don't. We just hear about it.
Did you want to?
No, but...
Yes! But, I want to see baby heads rolling.
I don't want to see Darth Vader killing children, but...
At least that kid that said...
Yeah, okay. I would enjoy seeing Vader kill the Jedi librarian that says, if it is not in the memory archive, it does not exist. But I there was a missed opportunity there to show maybe what the dark side gave Anakin or just, I don't know, something before the
final,
something before he's
battle.
Damaged. And anyway, I apologize for bagging on the prequels again. It's just like, it feels like they said, okay, hey, we're going to give the fans something that they've always wanted to see. And I'm fine with it. But yes, I recognize that that's maybe not the Darth Vader that we'd ever seen before. And it kind of doesn't make any sense. I mean, unless... was he taking this personally in some way? I don't know. When that Star Destroyer comes out of hyperspace and the Rebel ships hit into it, that is great, great filmmaking. Because
yeah,
we've been seeing our characters, the characters that hopefully we've grown to like, Big didn't, but you know, die. And it's like, but there's still a chance that some of them can get away. There's still a chance the good guys can survive. And then Vader shows up.
Yeah.
It's just, like you said, Renee, you don't have a problem with darkness. I really like that. And if he had stayed on the Star Destroyer and just blasted those ships one by one, or got in his little TIE fighter, and like he did in the second season episode of Rebels, and just started blowing up Rebel ships and all that, I would have been fine too. But we know that Vader was really proficient with the Force, and we know that he was great with the lightsaber and all that stuff. And so I'm just like, okay, yeah, that's cool. I'm good with seeing this.
I enjoyed it. It just struck me a couple of times that he didn't seem like the same Vader I knew from the other movies. But I liked this movie. I enjoyed it. I want to see it again. I liked it more than Force Awakens, if that's not blasphemous to say.
Why would that be blasphemous?
I guess my question for you guys is the different callbacks. So you have C-3PO and R2-D2 cameo. Did you guys like that? Or was that sort of, did you think, oh, this is kind of forced in?
It was a little Chewbacca-esque from the third movie.
Yeah.
You expect it, again, like Rish always jokes about, where Yoda says, and especially you, Chewbacca, and then turns to the camera and winks. You almost expected C-3PO to turn to the camera and wink at that point or something, although his eyes don't do that. Yeah, it was a little more than necessary, but I didn't hate it. The thing that I found odd about that is they're with the Rebellion all along, you know? It seemed to me like from Star Wars, which I'm not going to call episode 4, I'm just going to call it Star Wars.
Because that's what it's called.
Yes. At the start of that film, they seemed to be just random droids. Mm-hmm. They weren't droids that have been at the Rebel headquarters. They talked about not even being owned by, you know, our last master was, I don't remember who
Captain
they said.
Captain Antilles.
Yeah, so maybe that's... Is that Wedge's name?
Well, Captain Antilles is the guy that Vader is choking. It's like, we've intercepted no transmissions. This is a consular ship. That's Captain Antilles.
Okay.
And he's the guy at the end of Rogue One that manages to get through the door. Played by a different actor, and of course nobody notices.
Before it closes off.
Yeah.
We needed the CGI. Captain
yeah, see, what's yeah. up with that? Anyways, yeah, they just seemed clueless as far as the Rebellion goes. Maybe they were just putting all that act on. But at least C-3PO didn't seem to be putting an act on. He wasn't with the Rebellion. He was just a robot doing his thing. You know, R2 seemed to be really devoted to Princess Leia, but that felt almost like it was just R2 was a devoted kind of a guy, and if you gave him an important mission, he would do whatever he had to do to make it work. Not so much like, you know, he was always Princess Leia's favorite pet droid or anything like that, and he always did the thing where he jumped off of her back and then caught the ball when he threw it in the air or anything like that. It was just, he was a droid that got a mission, but instead throwing them there in the middle of the Rebel headquarters, you know, it changes things around, it seems. Which, that's the thing that I didn't like, and I've seen a bunch of times on Facebook and stuff like that recently where they're like, Rogue One just changed your understanding, episode 4, A New Hope, or some crap like that, with one little thing.
How did it change the understanding?
Oh, it didn't. But they would
but
say,
they want you to click on it.
Yeah, they would say stuff to like make you think that it did. And I would just be like, no, if you were an idiot, then you thought that's what Star Wars meant. But everybody knew that wasn't the case. Come on.
Well, but it's a 3-second scene we're talking about. 3PO goes, Scarif, we're going to Scarif.
No, it's very brief. And I feel like, and this will be interesting to see since they're making the young Han Solo movie, if they're going to try to shoehorn... R2-D2 and C-3PO into that.
And Walrus Man.
Because, you know, what I thought, like, I enjoyed it. And the cynical teenagers I watched it with who, you know, some of them were not fans of The Force Awakens at all, which I enjoyed. Like I said, I like Rogue One better, but I enjoyed Force Awakens. But, you know, they were like, eh, you know, this is so repetitive and not, you know, anything new. And but they liked seeing C-3PO and R2-D2. And like I thought, like, oh, that's cool. And, you know, they're in all the movies because that's what back when George Lucas said that they it was like Seventh Samurai, that like these were the two characters who were in everything, even though they didn't really understand what was going on. They were in those movies. So it didn't bother me. I thought it was fun. But again, you know, if they're going to keep expanding the universe, expanding the story, are they going to try
right.
to keep these conventions going? Because they didn't with Rogue One in certain ways. Like I was sitting there, you know, this is a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. And I was like, okay, here comes Star Wars, you know, and the John Williams music. And then we didn't have that. And so it was like, oh, but, you know, as the movie went on, I thought, well, okay, you know, it isn't in that same vein. This is a different sort of story.
Yeah, it's not the official plot line. It's not the
right.
It's not a Skywalker story in this case.
No, this is different. This is sort of the ugly, sad background story of why we end up where we end up.
Well, there were a couple other cameos, and the only one I didn't like was the Leia cameo, just because it was not really Leia. But like where we see Gold Leader and Red Leader.
Yes, yes, yes.
You have to really know Star Wars to go, but oh, hey, those guys. And somebody told me.
Well, we did because we had seen it just the day before. And I said to my kids, I'm like, well, was Biggs in it? Because there's that whole like, you know, Biggs, I always said I would make it to, you know, which wasn't in the original.
I wish Biggs had been.
But is in.
And I said, oh, where's Porkins, man? It would have been so cool to see it. Porkins, like, take down a TIE fighter
and
or something.
And you wanted Wedge in it, too.
But somebody told me the Wedge is actually in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
And that Dennis Lawson, who is British, and in 1977 they had an American guy dub all of his lines. You know, look at the size of that thing. And they got him to come back and be the voice of Wedge in an X-Wing who has a couple of lines. And so if next time I watch it, I will pay attention to that and see if I can pick that out. But it's like every single one of those that they threw at us, and I'm counting Bail Organa and young Mon Mothma and General Dodonna and Walrus Man. I loved every one of those.
Okay, this is where I like maybe am embarrassing myself, but Luke was Red 5, right?
Yes.
So the Red 5 in this crashes and burns, so that opens the slot for Luke.
Right.
Yeah. There you go. They had a opening. It's like, anybody got a pilot? We've got six guys in the Red group, but one of them's dead.
We're now hiring. Well, Marshall, were there too many cameos? Not enough cameos? What did you think?
Actually, the only cameo that really bothered me, and I've kind of come to terms with it now, but it was the R2 and 3PO scene. That one just kind of bothered me because I'm like, well, how does that fit in with everything? Was Princess Leia at the Rebel base the whole time, just hiding out in the Corvette with her droids or the droids that are also in that ship? Because I interpreted that Bail Organa was leaving Yavin to go to Alderaan and send Leia on the mission. But if R2 and 3PO are on Yavin, then obviously they're all there to begin with. So
right, but their owner is Captain Antilles, not Leia Organa, right? I mean, maybe the prequels changed that.
Right, I get, yeah, that's true. Did they run over to Alderaan and grab Leia and then come back just before they went on the raid? Yeah, I don't know. It probably doesn't matter.
Yeah, that was the thing that kind of bugged me as well was, you know, you have this big, massive battle at the end of this movie. And Leia's ship was there, and it was part of it. And Darth Vader's ship was right there next to it. And then you open up Star Wars, and they're like, oh, no, we're just on a diplomatic mission to this place. What are you talking about? Seems like the worst excuse in the world when... Nice try, but I was there yesterday. when, you know, you guys were handed the plants, it seems like the plans should have had at least one handoff in between that battle and the ship that Leia was on. I don't know. It seemed to collapse things a little bit too much for me. You know, but I don't know. It's a huge challenge, I guess, to put something like this together and not make it awful. And also not make it, like, really, really ruin things, you know, by completely contradicting things that were said in movies before and stuff like that, which, you know, the prequels did that several times. And yeah, Rogue One just didn't shoot themselves in the foot with all the things that they added in.
Yeah, Rogue One did a lot better job at that than the prequels.
What did you think, not from a story perspective, but from a look of it all perspective? I was talking about that with my kids. Star Wars 4, or Star Wars, literally was 40 years ago. I mean, that's crazy. And they were able, I thought, to match the look of it very well.
I wish we had gotten a few more really, really big mutton chop 70s sideburns.
Yeah, more 70s haircuts.
But other than that, it felt like Yavin felt like the same.
You got some of the stashes in there.
Well, I don't even mean that, but I mean, like, when you transitioned between the ships, you know, that last scene where it goes onto Captain Antilles' ship. I mean, just the look of it, the way it looked.
Yeah, they did recreate it very well.
It fit really well, I thought. And that's amazing when you consider the difference in how the movies were made and how so much has changed since 1977.
Yeah, they sure didn't just, you know, throw up a bunch of green screens and then put in CGI backgrounds like the clone aliens planets or something like that. You know, they actually did do a very good job of making it look lived in and interesting like Star Wars was in the first place. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it did need more 70s hairdos, just some more shaggy hair.
Well, see, that'll be fun to watch for the Han Solo thing. Do you try and make it look a little bit more like the prequels or like Force Awakens? Do you do everything that you can to say, okay, well, you know, this may not be Mos Eisley, but we're going to make it look and feel like it's, you know, just down, just around the corner from Mos Eisley and all that. And I really hope they do. I hope they give Han Solo the shaggy hair and all that stuff that's not really 2018, but...
Yeah.
Wide collars.
Really big collar that sticks all the way over to each shoulder.
But I don't know what I would do if I were that, except for that it totally worked in Rogue One. Whenever they were at Yavin 4, it felt like it was the exact same set, same lighting, and same costume designer.
They just pull it out of a storage shed, a little you store it.
And 40 years later, I mean, that's like crazy.
Watching the movie, I found my dream job. I want to be that guy, that rebel guy up on that turret. Tracking all the ships that go in and out.
With his, like, hair dryer.
Yeah.
With a radar gun.
Yeah. He's checking their speed, whether they need to give him a ticket. Okay, that guy's only 3 over. He's probably okay. I'll let him go.
Well, there's so much we could talk about. I mean, the whole space battle thing I thought was really good. I thought that was one of the best ones they've done this side of Return of the Jedi. For the space battle and getting into the blue, I really liked the blue leader. They kind of gave him a personality and things to do on the planet and stuff.
Just seeing X-wings flying around and shooting TIE fighters and stuff. Oh, it's magical, man! It just that feeling of these ships that you know and they mean so much. My whole life, I've known TIE fighters and X-wings and yeah, sure they threw in new ships so that they can make new toys. But anytime it was an old one, I got a thrill from it. It hit me in the feels, as you young folks say.
Yeah, all of us young folks on this show do say that.
Yeah, I don't think any of us are in that category, but listeners, perhaps.
I found end of the thing battle to be very similar to the Return of the Jedi battle, which I guess they've kind of taken that formula and run with it on a few other places as well. But you've got the three-pronged thing going on, which is a very common Star Wars. Big finale kind of a thing. You know, you had Return of the Jedi where you had the Ewok battle on the ground, and then you had the space battle, and then you also had Darth Vader and Luke going at it on the Death Star. And in this one, You had similarly the battle on the ground, you had the space battle, and you had the guys inside the tower trying to get to the plans and get those out with K2SO and that stuff going on.
But the big difference was that they didn't survive. You know, these characters that we had been traveling along with throughout the movie, they were striving for something beyond themselves and their own individual lives. And I think that was very different from what we've seen in other Star Wars movies.
Yeah, that is true. The other thing that I really liked about that ending is they've done it, you know, the end of Star Wars, they went in, they blew up a Death Star. The end of Empire, they went in, they blew up a Death Star. The end of... Oh, sorry, did I say Empire? I meant to say Return of the Jedi. The end of Return of the Jedi, they went in, blew up a Death Star. The end of Phantom Menace, they went in, blew up a...
Droid control ship.
Big spaceship.
Trade Federation.
And they've blown Force up Awakens. A Starkiller base. They do this a lot. But this time around, they changed it up, and you had... There wasn't like a space... station or any of that kind of thing they were trying to blow up, but you had that cool, they were going after the shield thing that was in space,
right?
Where there was just the little hole that you could get onto the planet with, and then they closed that off, and it made for an interesting new wrinkle or whatever you want to call it to this space battle. You know, the way they were unable to help the people on the ground, which I guess in the end led to them all being dead.
But they knew that, and that's where my kind of dark side appreciates that sort of storytelling. They knew, those characters knew that they were not going to survive.
Yeah, you do seem like
but
someone
they
that
were
has a dark side.
Working, I do. I'm very dark.
You're
that's what I'm
bad to the bone, is what you're saying?
Oh, don't do that.
Exactly. You guys have seen that in person. But they knew that they weren't going to survive. But they were doing it for something bigger than themselves.
Well, it means so much more that we got to know some of these people that died so that the galaxy could be free, so that Leia could get those plans back to Yavin and they could examine them and eventually destroy the weapon that was... I mean, we don't really know what's going on before the Death Star comes around, but I guess the Senate still had some kind of power. The Emperor had some of his powers in check. Marshall, do you get that impression that the senators, that they actually got things done, that they actually had authority?
Yeah, there was still some semblance of a government.
But then Tarkin says, you know, the last vestiges of the old republic have been swept away. You know, the Senate has been dissolved. Fear of this battle station, you know, is all that matters now, is we'll keep the local systems in line. So, yeah, the Empire, I guess, had been struggling for X number of years to keep control of the galaxy. And then finally, they've got a way to stomp out any resistance, anybody that has a problem with the way they run things. And so these people were willing to die. Like those ships that went, even though the senators said, no, you know, where the rebellion is done. And these ships said, we're going to go attack anyway. Even though, you know, we'll probably die or whatever, because it's bigger than us. We believe it's worth dying for. And yeah, that's Saving Private Ryan in space, like Gareth Edwards called it.
Well, and we also have this sort of theme, you know, there's a lot of repeating themes in Star Wars, but of your parent doing something that is evil or wrong, and how do you respond to that? And so in this movie, she knows that her dad has done something wrong. He knows that he's done something wrong. He's tried to do something to fix what he's done. And she is so determined to make sure that that happens. I just enjoyed that. I thought it was really well done.
Yeah, and this not only because they got the plans to the Death Star, but really this raid on Scarif and these people sacrificing themselves to get the plans, I mean, that unified the rebellion. That made it politically and emotionally possible for the rebellion to go after the Death Star and destroy it with the plans.
They had one target. They had one common goal to all work towards together. And you can see how that made a difference for them, because before that, you know, they're just trying to survive and fight against the Empire, but they didn't have sort of one thing to all focus on.
Yeah,
it was interesting. Now, here's a question for you guys. What did you think of the Death Star continually shooting planets, but not really? What was up with that? Why would it? Just fire with one. What did they say? One generator, one.
Actually, that did kind of bother me because in episode 4, it's like we're going to demonstrate the power of this battle station, you know, on Alderaan. Like that was such a huge moment. And you would think it maybe wouldn't be quite as big of a deal if we had already seen them blowing up different cities and areas of other planets.
But they kind
of...
But it didn't just blow up a city either. I mean, you hit it, and then, oh yeah, it blew up the city. But then, yeah, it was such a thing that it just kept... It basically wiped out the whole planet. It just didn't do it all in 1 second.
But it didn't blast the planet to powder. It hit a city, and then there was the shock wave that kind of spread out and affected more people. But
left them...
I mean, don't... It was different than when they blew up Alderaan. I mean, they blew that up and then there was nothing left but just...
Planets gone.
Bits of rock.
Well, the first one, when they destroyed Jeddah, you know, they covered that up. They said it was a weapons malfunction or something like that. Somebody said that at some point, Krennic or somebody. But then when you have the same thing happening on Scarif, then I don't know how if they can explain that one the same way or not. But
same weapon malfunctioned again.
Yeah, maybe they could have saved that just for the one, you know, for destroying the...
But don't you think there's a difference between... I think they have such a challenge when they're making these movies because you need to make a movie that works on its own, that's entertaining, that has high stakes and payoffs and all of that. But then you also have to fit it into all of the other movies and... That's got to be tough. So I can see why, like, if you're just looking at Rogue One by itself, you can see why they did that, because otherwise who really cares about the Death Star? If it's not really going to do anything, it's not that much of a threat. Even if we know it does in other movies, like in this movie, it's not. So I can see that. But when you look at the big picture, it maybe loses something.
Yeah, I suppose so. That would probably be a similar argument you could make towards the Darth Vader scene then, you know. Yeah, Darth Vader's in his little fish tank and then he comes out and he's like, I am badass, so watch out for me. But if he never actually, you know, delivers on that threat, then people just be like, yeah. Yeah, that looks kind of like what Anakin looked like in that suit at the end, and he was dumb. He just went, no! I saw that movie, and that was lame. So poor Darth Vader must be a wuss. So, you know, maybe it's the same kind of thing that needed to be delivered upon. I don't know.
Well, see, I think for the most part it was wildly successful. I don't feel that Rogue One stands on its own as a movie apart from the Star Wars films. You have to have seen Star Wars to appreciate Rogue One, unlike any of the other movies. But I felt like it was satisfying, and it felt at home. And I don't know. It just I hope that they can continue to keep up that kind of quality with these other ones, have sort of a different feel in each one, and if so, you know, I'll continue to go to them and get excited and buy their darn toys.
Yeah, and I see what you're saying there about, you know, kind of have to know Star Wars, but I guess I could see it as a new gateway into the original trilogy, into Star Wars. You know, if somebody just goes and sees Rogue One, then they're going to be impressed and intrigued by what's going to happen next, and maybe go and watch the original trilogy to begin with.
Do you think Rogue One's going to keep racking up money?
Well, it's made $1 billion. How much more money does it need to rack up?
Well, I just for fun pulled up Box Office Mojo, and The Force Awakens, which came out last year, has a domestic gross of $936 million.
Sure.
And Rogue One only has $500 million. Now that's
only.
Yeah, I mean, that's a funny thing to say. Is it only $500 million? But that's nearly half what the other movie is, and all of us here, I think, agree that it was better than The Force Awakens.
No, I think I like Force Awakens.
Oh, you liked it better? Okay, so 3 out of 4.
I think that partly it was timing, Because when Force Awakens came out, we hadn't had a new Star Wars movie since episode 3, you know, which was, when was that, like 2005, 2006?
Yeah, so 10 years.
So I think that was part of it. But I also don't think they built up Rogue One nearly as much as Force Awakens in publicity and all.
I don't think they ever expected it to do Force Awakens numbers.
But nothing has done Force Awakens numbers. You know what I mean?
It's like Force Awakens on
the list. No movie has made $900 million before domestically.
Yeah.
Except for Gone with the Wind, adjusted for inflation, made $1,719 million.
Yes, but Star Wars adjusted for inflation.
$1,515 million.
Okay.
I think Rogue One will have a staying power. You know, I mean, I would love to see it again. You know, I know we'll buy the DVD. I mean, because we're old-fashioned and we still buy DVDs.
Wow, but, yeah, you don't say in the feels like the young kids, do you?
If you want to see all the cool scenes, you have to wait till the 3D Blu-ray comes out.
None of us are going to do that, Marshall. I'm sorry.
But I think it will. I think it's one of those that will last. It's something that isn't going to flame out. And people seem to like that dark, higher stakes sort of a movie. I mean, Empire Strikes Back was a higher, dark, super dark and big stakes. So we'll see. It'll be interesting to see. I think it's cool that they did it. You know, I think it's cool that they went this direction. I wouldn't have expected that. I mean, would you? Like if...
No, none of us would have.
Disney takes over Star Wars and they do this. Like, I find that very surprising and refreshing.
Yes, I did too. We all were a little bit afraid that Disney would Disneyfy Star Wars. And
Star Wars would suddenly become the Apple Dumplin' Gang.
And I felt like that was a legitimate fear.
Especially when they cast Don Knotts in that one.
A computer and a CGI Don Knotts.
Nobody under 40 got that reference at all.
Oh, we've got fake Sean Connery. We've got Star Wars Don Knotts.
We've got fake Tim Conway on this one.
Lots of potential
but
here.
If you listen to our last episode, Marshall was talking about an interview with Gareth Edwards where he was afraid that Disney wouldn't let them kill everybody off. And, you know, because maybe kids are going to see this and all that stuff. And it was quite the contrary. Disney said, well, none of them can survive.
The you one got, guy you had... plan to get away. No, you got to kill him.
What? And so in the reshoots, yeah, they had a little bit more bleakness in there, a little bit more violence and unhappy endings for good guys. And to me, that's kind of amazing. I mean, Disney has been a really, really good overseer, if you want to use that word, for Marvel and Pixar and Star Wars in just, hey, we like what you guys do. We're going to give you free reign to do it. As long as you're making money for us, you can continue to do what you want. And that's the best kind of boss or owner or whatever you want to call it that you can have.
Yeah.
Yeah, hopefully that keeps up. It'll be interesting to see down the line how these movies keep going.
Well, and the bringing up Pixar, that it makes sense because Pixar has, you know, most of the time been about really great stories and really great characters and not necessarily trying to be formulaic and, you know, sort of copy what has come before to try to sell movie tickets. And so, yeah, if they can keep on with this with Star Wars, I think that's going to be really great for it and for everyone who likes it.
Okay, to kind of wrap things up for Rogue One here, I guess I think pretty much answered the question for most everybody. But Gino Moretto, after he first saw it, he said, this is the best Star Wars movie ever. I guess I wouldn't go that far, but I'd probably say that Rogue One is probably number 4 on my list. Is that about where you guys would put it?
I don't know that anything will ever touch the original trilogy for me, because I feel like I wouldn't be me without those three movies. No movie has ever impacted me the way those have. So I don't know that anything will ever encroach on that. But yeah, I'd definitely put Rogue One as number 4.
Well, four wouldn't encroach.
You would have to make it 5 because you already confessed to having liked The Force Awakens more.
Okay. He called me on that. Somebody was listening to the show.
It has to be at least five, and I'm pretty sure it couldn't be anything but five, because there's no way, having sat across from you all these years, that any one of those prequels could be outdoing this show. So.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
A Jar Jar Banksian film?
I was going to make the joke. Was Tarkin always called Grand Moff or Governor? Or did they ever call him General Tarkin?
They never call him Grand Moff in the movies. Leia calls him Governor, and I think they call him Governor Tarkin in this as well.
Okay, so it's always Governor. For some reason in my mind, I remember it. General Tarkin. Because then I would want to say that he was Bombad General Tarkin now that he's CG.
Jeez. Have you been saving that up to end the show?
No, it's not supposed to be the end of the show because we still have more topics to speak on.
No.
Unless we're turning that into a third show,
a second show.
It's
going to have to be a different show, right, Marshall?
Yeah, it is.
It's been a long...
Anyways, yeah, I would probably put it as number four. I liked it a little more than Force Awakens, and yeah, the prequels are a distant 6, 7, and 8 right now.
Yeah, I'm not big on ranking. I really enjoyed it though, and I just love that I get, you know, at my elderly state in life, I get to see new Star Wars movies. Like, how awesome is that? You know, like the first Star Wars movie I saw, I was 7 years old, and now at going on 47 this year, there are new Star Wars movies. It's like so amazingly cool and great, and I'm very happy.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. One thing that, yeah, I thought it would be interesting to ask you, since I think you may be the only, or maybe Marshall hasn't been asked this yet either, but there was a movie by a Star Wars movie last year. Now there's another Star Wars movie this year. Was it less special because it's only been a year since the last one? Or are you still like, it's Star Wars, it doesn't matter, I can't wait?
Well, maybe it is because of the fact that, like, last year I saw Force Awakens
the day after it came out.
And this one I was like, I wanted to see it. It wasn't that I didn't want to see it, but I wasn't as like, oh my gosh, we have to see it, like, right, day one, day two.
Right.
So maybe it wasn't as special, but I never go to see movies in the movie theater, and I did see Rogue One in the theater, so, you know, there's that.
Yeah, that's one of the things about a Star Wars film is, yeah, I mean, everybody in my family has gone to see that in the theater, even though we don't always do that kind of stuff, so.
Yeah.
There's certain things that you just go and see, and Star Wars movie is one of those.
Yeah, I don't know if it was less special than last year. I mean, it is more recent, and... You know, we've been talking about Rogue One since before Force Awakens came out, so we've had more time to consider it, I guess. But I think I was equally excited to see Rogue One as I was Force Awakens. I don't know if that'll continue, but...
Now, December, another one comes out. Are you as excited to see Episode 8, the Sith reappears?
Ooh, that's not a good title.
No, that's weird.
I mean, it's still better than Episode 2's title, but boy, the Sith reappears.
It's better than the Attack of the Clones.
But you have to say it slowly. The Sith reappears.
Yeah, that's what makes it better, is the stumbling over it really makes it really pop. But yeah, will you be as excited about that one, or you're like, meh?
I'm pretty excited to see it, because knowing that they start right when... Force Awakens left off, that I'm pretty excited to see what goes on with Luke and Rey and that kind of thing.
Where Luke says, who the frick are you? And what are you doing with my lightsaber?
Did you find my hand?
Yeah, there was a hand with that lightsaber too. Did you bring that with you?
That'd be awesome. She pulls out this little shriveled.
She's like, as a matter of fact, here, it's in this box.
I was using it as a paperweight.
No, I will be excited to see any new Star Wars movie that comes out. And I'll see it in the theater, you know, maybe not on day one, but...
I'm interested to see when the excitement wears off. I think a big part of it will be just how good the movies continue to be. Yeah. I know a lot of people who were really upset with how The Force Awakens was. They were really irritated with the, oh, we're going to blow up another Death Star and this kind of stuff. And so I wonder if they will still be excited about it when the next part comes out or not. And yeah, you know, like Marvel movies, people are still really excited about them usually when they come out because most of them have been good and it's been worthwhile. And you go and see it because the brand seems to deliver. And for these last two, I would say the Star Wars brand has delivered. And as long as I guess they keep that up, then I think the excitement will stay.
Yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy will be what, number 12 or number 11 since Iron Man?
Somebody told me we're on 13 already. But see, the thing with the Marvel movies is they keep switching it up. You'll get something that's really funny, or you get something that's really dour and adult like Winter Soldier, or you'll get something like Doctor Strange that is kind of mind-bending and made by a horror film director, and the tone changes from film to film. It's not the same thing every single time. And if they can keep doing that with Star Wars, you know, we get a saga film, and then we get something dour and violent like Rogue One, and then we get a saga film, and then we get whatever Han Solo is, which I'm assuming is going to be fun and adventure, and maybe it'll feel like a pirate movie in space or something. I don't know. But if they can have each one feel different, then I think that we won't get tired. That it's like, oh, okay, did you see the new one? Yeah, that one's going to be scary. The first scary Star Wars film.
Yeah. According to Box Office Mojo, there is 14 Marvel Cinematic Universe movies.
Wow, okay.
There you go.
But that's not what we were talking about. We were talking about Star Wars.
We have talked about Star Wars for a long, long time in a galaxy somewhere around the corner. And I really appreciate you guys getting together, all four of us, with our schedules. And yeah, Renee, you're a grade D celebrity right now, so it's hard to get a hold of you. And sorry.
Well, thanks. Wow.
Have you joined the C list yet? I apologize if I underestimated your fame.
No. I'm D at the minimum. So.
But Marshall and I tend to always be here, and anytime we can have a guest, it feels special to me.
It does. Yeah, it's nice to have everybody talking about different things. Well, you know, I had grand plans tonight about talking about Carrie Fisher as well, but obviously we've gone on way too long to get that in tonight. I don't know. Do you think we'd be able to have lightning strike twice and be able to arrange something for next week? Or?
Sure.
Well, yeah, Renee is the wild card. If
the D-list celebrity wild card.
Well, I'm sorry. That was for the show. It was supposed to be funny. I hope it's not insulting to you.
There's no, as I've said before on these podcasts, read my Audible reviews. There's lots of people who do not appreciate what I do. It was the holidays. I was gone and, you know, I was at Disneyland and away. So it made it tough. But I'm around. So, yeah, I would love to. Oh, my gosh. Carrie Fisher would love to talk about her. So.
All right, we'll do it.
Yeah, just let me know. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, if you're okay with that, then I think we'll probably just let everybody go tonight. But we had these plans of doing episodes when the movies are not new anymore and we're looking for subjects about characters. You know, it's like we're going to do an episode where we just talk about R2-D2, or we're going to do an episode where we talk about Lobot. Okay, that's a very short episode.
He's my favorite character.
But
I'm the biggest Lobot fan of anyone.
And so, yeah, if you wouldn't be able to get together, I just think it would be fun to get a little voice clip of Renee for a couple of these characters. But yeah, Princess Leia means more than most to me and to other people I've talked to. So I felt like, okay, it's important to do a whole episode instead of just a... Oh, hey, when you get a chance, send us a voicemail of what you think of, you know, IG-88. Okay, well, once again, guys, thanks a lot for spending, what, 2 hours? 2.5? Oh, 6.5 hours talking about Star Wars with us tonight. And there is always more to be said. But for now, we're going to call it an end. But truly, the Force is in me. I am one with, we are all one with the Force right now. Gosh, that sounded awful, Marshall. Can you save the day?
Well, you know, Rish, you know, I'll be there for you. The captain said I had to, so. All right. We're off. May the Force be with you.
The Delusions of Grandeur podcast is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license. This means you can share it with anyone, but do not change it or sell it. Many Bothans died to bring us this information.